Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the show. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Burling, and today I'm delighted to be joined by speculative fiction author Sal Goldenberg. Sal, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you very much for joining me. I've been excited to chat with you, not just about your brand new book, The Last Free Hunter, which came out on the 9th of April, very recent release, and it's something I'm excited to read. Got it on my Kindle there, ready to go. But I'm also very excited to talk to you about the stories that you like to tell outside of perspectives. There's some very interesting themes that you're inspired by as well, which I can relate to a lot. So we're going to get into that. It's going to be interesting. I'm just talking generally about writing, because that's what we like to talk about on the show, just how different authors approach the process. So good place to start. Tell us a bit about you and how you got into writing.
Yeah, so I've been writing, I'm one of those been writing since I was like little kid type writers, you know, just doing a bunch of scribbles on a paper and coloring and a picture and decided it was a story, you know, and I always wrote kind of like stories like that. My grade school actually had a little publishing center in the school, which was really cute. You could submit your like story and then they would print it out and laminate it. They would type it up for you, you know, because you're like nine or whatever. Print it out, laminate it. You could illustrate the cover. It was so cute. And I would just I think I annoyed my teachers because I'd be constantly submitting these books to like get published. And then they'd have a little library and your friends could check it out. Yeah. And it was really cool. So my love for like telling stories and having sharing them with people started really young. And I just kept writing throughout, but it never, like I always talk about how it never really occurred to me to like actually be a writer, like an author, because it just seemed like some kind of crazy dream that like no one really gets to do. You know, I never really thought about it, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't start, you know, trying to get published until like 2016 or something like that. But I'd always been writing, you know, just for myself and like a couple of my friends, like one of my best friends, I would always just kind of like send her, we would just trade stories all the time. She was deployed in Afghanistan and I just started sending her chapters of a book I wrote basically to entertain her in the like, you know, hurry up and wait trenches or whatever and keep her spirits up. But yeah, so it's always been a thing I've been doing. So I'm just like super stoked to finally actually get started on getting them out to more people.
Yeah, that's a great story. What do you think the turning point was? The moment in time where you thought, I actually want to be a writer, and you decided to start trying?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the same friend, I think, who actually texted me one day and just sent me a picture of some book in the bookstore and was like, you know, we've written stuff better than this. I don't know what book it was. But why can't we actually be on the shelf, you know? And it was just like I never really like even thought about it weirdly. And I was like, oh, you have a point. Like, how do we do this? So started researching like how to get an agent, how to query, what publishing is like. Like it's a whole process that I was completely unaware of, you know? So I just started doing that. And I think that was like the turning point of just deciding like, yeah, let's do this. And then, you know, still working day job. And I think like it got like, I think a couple of years later and I was just kind of struggling at my day job at the time, and I'm like, whatever, I'm just gonna quit and try to be a writer, which I don't recommend for most people, because it's like, yeah, I want to just like be a starving writer this late in life, but whatever, I just went for it. And that actually, it was hard. I was like freelancing on the side to make rent and stuff, but it helped me get the time to write every day, like a lot every day, and since I work in a creative field, professionally, I didn't have that energy being used towards a job that I could put all into writing. So that period of time was really helpful. Like I was able to, barf out a bunch of novels that will never be seen by the light of day, just to kind of get it out, and start going on it and figuring out how the hell to do any of it. Gave me time to like study craft or whatever. Did that a little bit until I was like, wow, they're just saying the same things over and over. Okay, there's nothing more I can really learn here. I mean, so yeah, that was like the one point, was like kind of having the epiphany of like, oh, I could do this probably. And then kind of like taking the plunge and trying to do it. Well, I wouldn't even say it would be full time, because it's not like I was making any money,
When you all your time to it.
It was like full time, but that's kind of misleading,
I think it's an incredible investment. I have quite a similar story. I was working as a lawyer, decided that I hated it and quit to be a writer and just tried to live off savings for like 6 months and then
Yeah,
had to
no,
get a
similar.
job. But like you say, taking that plunge and freeing all that time up so that you can actually study, practice, and you don't you, the improvements in that space of time was incredible because you threw yourself into it and you start to see it in a different light then, don't you, as well in your mind. It becomes not just a hobby, something you do after work. It
Yeah.
is work.
There's like an urgency that comes with it when you're like, okay, you're just like watching your savings account like dwindle, every day. When you're getting rejections, you're like, okay, it's another day on the countdown. But yeah, it definitely helped me kind of level up during that time of having the time to like really like work on it. And then be disciplined about it was a big thing, because working from home and stuff, everyone's kind of learned like, yeah, if you don't give your make like make yourself have a schedule or sort of ritual, then it can really get lost in the sauce, when you're trying to just randomly do things. So yeah, it helped me stay like more disciplined with myself too.
Nice. So when did the last fee hunter start in the whole process?
Yeah, I started writing it in 2020. It was actually a NaNoWriMo project. I mean, I had the threads of ideas before and other stories, but I kind of put it all together around then. And it kind of clicked for me as soon as I started writing. I really felt inspired, and it just kind of flowed, and I like destroyed the NaNoWriMo goal. I went over 50,000 like before, I think. And then just kept writing it until it was done. That's the other thing. If you guys are, sorry, or I guess NaNoWriMo is not a thing anymore, but if you're doing like the whole novel a month thing and you finish it, don't stop, just ride the wave, keep going. But yeah, I finished it probably a month later, I think, in Jan or a few months later, maybe in January. So it took about 2 to 3 months to write it.
Nice.
And then I left it alone for a while, just to kind of like, recover. Started working on something else in the meantime. And then I went back to it to edit, sent it out to some beta readers, a couple critique people. I sent it out to like some non-writers too, because like I like kind of getting a mix of perspectives, because sometimes if you send it out to only your beta readers, you're just going to get like very writerly, feedback. They're looking at it through a certain lens, not just, sometimes you can get some really good feedback by someone who's never written like creatively and just has that reader reaction,
Definitely, that's a big issue.
So I put it out to beta readers. And then I started revising it. I forget how long it took. I really hate revision, but I did that. Yeah. And then eventually I just started querying it for a while. Gosh, I have this timeline somewhere, but I don't know where it is. But I was just querying different agents. I got like a couple of requests, but nothing came up from it. And then I saw Angry Robot had an open submissions period. So I just thought, well, what the hell? Why not? And submitted to it, like kind of as an afterthought. I was like, there's no way they're gonna like pick this up, you know? And I totally forgot about it. And then like 6 or 7 months later, or something like that, I got an email from them, was like, yeah, send us more. And I'm like, woo, you know, so did that. And things started to happen pretty quickly after that, a couple of months when they read it, liked it, had the call, you know, took it to acquisitions. Thing was, I didn't have an agent at the time. So they were very much very cool and being like, oh, we want to give you time to get an agent because we know that's really important for your career. And it's called Open the Doors. They want to bring in like new writers, you know, and really kind of give them a shot in the industry. So I was really grateful that they, you know, gave me some time to find the right agent, you know, didn't rush me on it. And so I found an awesome agent. I love her. She's great. And
What was
yeah,
that
that
process like of finding an agent when you had an offer already?
once you have an offer, they answer you so much faster because I have a theory that a lot of agents will just wait until they get that offer received. Do you really want this? And they're like, oh yeah.
I'll check
Someone
with
else
you.
did the work for me. Cool. I'm just kidding. If any agent is listening, I'm sure you guys read all of them. But yeah, so it was like I started getting requests a lot faster. So that was really nice. At the same time, it can be like kind of, I feel like it was really stressful too, because, you know, when you get a form rejection, you can like really like shake it off easily because you're like, oh, whatever, who knows? They might not have read it or they didn't have time, whatever. I prefer the form rejections a lot of times because when I get like, you know, feedback, I'm just like, oh, so you did read it and you did make a value judgment and you know, so I think that can be kind of stressful when you start getting the more personalized rejections because then you're like, wait, are they right? But I mean, for the most part, rejection is not something that phases me very much. So I was able to kind of like push through and finally find an agent that I just had a gut feeling that she was really like the one for me. So yeah, it was, I went for her.
Brilliant.
She's
So,
great.
and never give up. That's the a good takeaway from that one.
Yeah,
Keep
totally.
going. Keep going.
That's really it.
Nice.
That's
So,
really
tell
it.
us all about the story because I think it sounds fantastic. I've got it. Like I said, I got it lined up.
Loaded up.
To give you a little snippet. It's rich with Thai demon folklore. No, you can't say you've ever heard of a story like that. So tell us all about
Yeah, that, I mean, that was a big reason I wanted to write it. I was seeing more stories coming out from like non-Western fantasy perspectives and settings, and I thought about it. I was thinking about the whole own voices thing, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should write something like, you know, inspired by part of my heritage. I'm half Thai, and I started, you know, I've always liked the whole like monster hunter kind of stories, like the Witcher type things. There's always like really cool, like the lone hunter in the forest or whatever. So, and I had a story like that before, just like a short story that I liked. But yeah, so then I started looking at Thai monsters and in like folklore and the hungry ghosts, which are kind of like, they're kind of like monsters, but what I liked about them, the Fi, or that they were all, I mean, they're all human, but they're being like punished for their sins by becoming these kind of like wretched creatures that are just suffering. And then, you know, people like can see them in life. And a lot of times they're not like dangerous. They're just kind of like, it's like a Buddhist parable. Like, look at this. You don't want to end up like this, you know, be nice to your parents. Don't talk back, whatever. And some of them are like really funny. I was reading a book about them, and I was like, I was like surprised at how many were just like, this This hungry ghost appears as a tree stump covered in feces and just screams, "Feed me shit." Like it was pretty like to the point where I'm like, I can't even put this in the story because people think it's too ridiculous, but it's actually there, you know? And I was reading more about like folk magic and kind of the rituals they do or did, like black magic and necromancy was a big thing. And I was just so intrigued by all of it that I thought it would be a great place to put in a story. And I knew that, like, you know, before I wrote it, I was like, I wonder if anyone else has done this yet. And I looked and didn't see any. And I was kind of surprised at how very little, like, Thai inspired or Southeast Asian inspired fantasy there was out there. And so I thought that people needed to know, you know.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So the characters, tell us all about them.
Yeah, so the main character's name is X. He is a fee hunter who is sort of young and ambitious and scrappy, you know. And he's like on his way to hunt a demon that he thinks is going to give him like a claim because since he's like a younger hunter, he doesn't think the other guys take him seriously, so he wants to like prove himself and so he's on his way to hunt a demon when he like stops off somewhere and he gets in a fight in a bar and this woman shows up and saves him from being getting his ass kicked. Turns out she's pregnant and her name is Arinya and he a and she asks him to help her get through the forest to find a witch. And as they travel together, more secrets come out and he gets kind of sucked into this larger plot, and it will make him question, you know, what he wants and how far he'll go.
Just a lot of intrigue there.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Like, it gets in the, it's kind of funny because it gets into like spoiler territory relatively quickly.
Yeah.
So I can only really like talk about, or at least I don't know how spoilery we can get, but, oh, but you haven't read it yet, so I can't spoil it for you. But yeah, I think the spoilers kind of start around chapter like three,
That's cool.
like the twists, I guess you could say. I don't know. But yeah, I can talk vaguely
Yeah.
about it.
So tell us about like your process of creating characters. Did you have a character in mind when you were thinking about the story, or did you think about the reset, like the coming up with like sort of the concept of the fee hunters first, and then that sort of organically gave you characters? How did that work?
Yeah, so it kind of started from the seeds of like maybe three different stories. There was the short story I mentioned, and it was kind of this more generic demon hunter setting where this the thing that stuck out to me that stayed with me about it was kind of like this scene of this hunter doing this weird ritual to like be able to fight this demon and being able to speak with the demon, like mentally, along with a hunting companion named the Hound, but he didn't really know his name. Very mysterious, not his dog, but you know,
Yeah.
his partner, sort of. And so, like, yeah, I guess it would start with the character, but more of a archetype, I guess, or like an idea of like what the character or job, like the fee hunter kind of idea, and then. You know, it would build from there. There was another story I had that I used that was just like a couple chapters of some like mercenary type getting jumped in a bar and like not fighting back because it was against, you know, his morals or something.
Yeah.
And that was where more of his personality came from. So, you know, combining all those together kind of got me to where the story ended up being. Because a lot of times I'll start writing and not really know anything about anything. Like,
Yeah.
I don't really plan that much, you know, before I start. Because I like to sort of discover things and go off and come up with new stuff. So yeah, like it kind of grew, you know, from a seed to become what it was.
Nice. You get loads more twists and turns, don't you, with that approach, I find.
Yeah, and for better or worse, like sometimes it can, it's there's always a danger when you're, I mean, I made an outline. It was, like a couple sentences per beat type of outline, and a lot of it just, I think by the time you get to the halfway mark, you're like, this is not the story that I thought I was writing. But it does serve to like hit the, what emotional beats need to happen when, like tent poles kind of, or like, I know this set piece is gonna happen. I'm gonna make sure that happens. But I think like a danger you can get in when you're more of a discovery writer or pantser is kind of making the plot too tidy, because sometimes there's like too much circumstance, or just to kind of fit your crazy, blanket of plot together, and you're like making all these weird adjustments. And so I think that's something you have to fix in revision. And you have to do a lot more revision as a pantser than you do as an outliner, that's for sure.
Never fun, is it? Up there, revising.
Yeah, I mean, I hate revising, but I also like it because it's one of those things where like when you figure out the solution, you feel so smart, it's really satisfying.
It is where like the real writing is done, isn't it? It's where everything is sort of polished and tied together nicely and
Yeah.
you can't skimp on the editing, that's the main point.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to today's show. This is just a very quick break to share some messages from our sponsors. This is a paid advertisement by Fictionary. Fictionary is a tool that offers writers a structured approach to editing. It was created by best-selling author Christina Stanley and was designed using her knowledge and insights. Let's face it, not many writers enjoy editing. It can be laborious, and with so much to analyze and consider, it can be tough to get right to. Fictionary seeks to tackle these problems. After you upload your manuscript and enter the details of your scenes and chapters and the nature of your book, it'll present you with graphics and overviews that analyze your story. It breaks down things like character arcs, story arcs, and it can measure the development of your story compared to what would be expected by other readers in the genre. Fictionary also offers the opportunity to get key developmental help with your stories, and this can help you adjust and tweak the structure so that it flows like a river. It takes you through a very simple process that guides you through the process of building your story up layer by layer. It can help beginner writers, and it can also help experienced writers too, which makes it a very unique and useful tool. I've used the tool myself, and I found the visual overviews and the analysis very helpful indeed. The more time you spend using the tool, the more familiar you become with its analytical functions, and that will see you get the very, very best results. So if you're looking for more advanced support with your editing, but you don't quite have the budget for an editor, try Fictionary. It's free for 14 days, and you don't have to enter any credit card information to get that trial. And also, as a very special offer to listeners of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed, you can get 25% off the first 6 months of your monthly subscription or 6 months off the first year of your annual subscription. The code is FWT25, and you can head to fictionary.co /FWT to find out more. How did you approach the world, the creation of the world in the story? Because it does sound very cool. I mean, you mentioned a few sort of things like bar fights, and I like the sound of like incorporating that into a fantasy setting. So can you tell us about how you decided on your approach to the world building?
Yeah, I knew that I wanted to incorporate Thai-inspired culture and sort of like it's kind of like the medieval period, the Yutia period, in what it was once Siam. So I was looking at some stuff from history there, like the country was like, or the countryside, and thinking about the role of like religion. I had re was reading about like the monks and that how they influence society, you know, from a very early period. And I think when I was making up the Fee Hunters Guild, they kind of are almost a little bit monk-like because they have a lot of traditions, they have a lot of like rules for themselves and like morals and stuff. And so it kind of inspired that a little bit. I was thinking about it was a different period. This is the reason I don't write historical fantasies because I have no idea how to keep track of dates and stuff.
Yeah,
But
same.
you know, later in Taiwan's history, when they were being threatened by colonization, you know, the king at the time made sure to like start modernizing the country. And you know, it was to the point where he had his court dressing like the Westerners that were coming in and changing the architecture of the cities and trying to like reform like religion, you know, and make it less superstitious. So that was where the idea of the current era of Suriname in the last few hundreds, the name of the country, starting to like modernize, starting to push into like the woods and, you know, kind of run the spirits out of like as they're, you know, building more things and trying to steer the people away from being not being superstitious and stuff, so they kind of look more civilized to outside powers. It's kind of in the background because X, the character, is not really concerned with any of those things. He's
Yeah.
just kind of like trying to live his life, you know. He doesn't really think about politics. And when they come into his, you know, when they come into his world, he's very much like a fish out of water. So you kind of get his perspective on that, like kind of looking at this. He's like a endangered creature, you know. He's like looking at all these people, like thinking, like, what is this stuff? I don't want any part of it, but you know, he sees like the world changing. And I think part of that vibe too was I really, really liked you know, Princess Mononoke, the Studio Ghibli. There was this like emotional tone in that movie of like just how progress is making the world less magical, you know. And
Yeah.
I really like it's kind of melancholy, you know, it's kind of exciting in the same way. And that feeling of loss too is something I wanted to capture, you know.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Like you say, it's almost like relatable in so many more ways as well, because like you could even say like things like capitalism's getting out of control and destroying forests and stuff like that. Like you could tie it in with that. It's amazing, like theme. And that's something I wanted to ask you about. Like it seems like you do place quite a lot of weight on the themes and like what your story is actually about. This is what I'm looking to explore in the story. Is that something that you thought about at the beginning, or is that something that sort of or came out as you went along?
I think it kind of came out as it went along. Like I was thinking about the character and the journey and the things and how he's moving through the world. And then the themes kind of surfaced as I was writing, I think. One of the characters, Arinya, she's pregnant. And there's like kind of some motherhood and body autonomy themes in her story. She's not a POV character, but she has a big part in the story. And then having the main character X be this, he's from like a mountain village, and so in most of the society, he's not looked at as sort of equal or civilized, so he's kind of an outsider
Yeah.
to his you know, fellow Surirami's people. So he's a bit of an outcast, and so there's questions of like who he wants to be and who he thinks he is, how the world views him, and yeah, and like can you change, or like maybe you should change, or you know, being able to like look at other perspectives and learn from that and grow. Like it's not a coming of age story, you know. It's they're over the YA kind of age. They know the characters, like know who they are, you
Yeah.
know, have a good idea of it. But it's kind of when things start to challenge that view, like how do they respond to it?
That's a really good like angle to take, I think, because people don't stop changing. Like YA is heavily associated with these sort of like coming of age, like epiphany moments, and but
Yeah.
people don't just get to like 21 and then just like they're the same person for like the next 70
Oh
years.
yeah. I mean, I was a total idiot when I was 21. Like if I stopped growing then, that would be terrible. But yeah, like yeah, exactly what you're saying. We're all like works in progress, you know? So there's always room to grow every day.
Yeah, and that's a great thing to explore in your stories. And I particularly like you focus on outsiders because this is something I love to explore. And I think, I don't know why, I was going to ask you why you're like this.
Why
Because
are you
I,
like this?
no, why you like the outsider perspective. I was thinking about why I tend to focus on like underdogs and outsiders and stuff like that. And I think it does tie in a lot with where I'm from. As like Liverpool has historically been like pretty obviously fully in a nice one.
Yeah, what
sort
is
of
it like?
castigated society like city. So like the people of I'll get into it like but the people of Liverpool are often branded as like thieves and lowlifes and
It's like football
benefits.
teams, like
It's a lot to do with
gangs.
that, but it's a very working class city as well, and they don't like taking shit from people. So,
Oh yes. Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
like that when you grow up in that sort of thing, I get why that comes around. And working class, essentially, it's that sort of you're trying to, especially when it comes to writing, you're trying to sort of reach into a very middle class industry. So you do feel like a bit of an outsider, especially when you go to like conferences and stuff like that. So I don't know, it's sort of filtered through. But why would what is it that allows you
Yeah,
to?
I can totally relate to that. I mean, I've always kind of felt like an outsider since I was even a kid because, you know, I grew up in America, biracial, you know, half white, half Thai. So I never really fit in even as a kid, you know,
Yeah.
because at school you are not white. And then at home with family, you're not quite all Asian, so you get kind of left out of both sides, which kind of, you know, is hard to deal with when you're growing up and you always kind of feel a little bit alienated or whatever. And I think that's why I kind of gravitated towards the punk rock scene and music, because everyone in that is kind of feels like an outsider or alienated in some way. So that was a big refuge for me, and you know, continues. I'm still like, you know, in the scene and stuff and doing music, and we'll always have that punk rock streak probably comes out of my writing a little bit.
Nice.
And so yeah, outsiders, I've always could relate to them and want to cheer for the underdog, you know, and people that, you know, would normally be maybe discriminated against or just stereotyped as someone that is a certain way. I always like want to break that down and challenge those stereotypes and stuff like that. But as far as like going to writing conferences, I do kind of feel like a fish out of water, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, same.
I'm like, should I like dress nicer? I don't know. But I think my mom like keeps texting me like, when are we going shopping? Because like now that I'm published, she's like, you need to look like a real writer. Go get you some nice clothes. And I'm just like, eh. I kind of decided that I wasn't even gonna try. I was just gonna be like, whatever.
Be
This is
yourself.
me. I know a lot of writers, you know, they're just kind of are them they should be themselves. So but yeah, like I know what you mean. Like I especially when I was starting to get seriously trying to like get published, I was pretty broke and applying to like scholarships and stuff. I did win one, which was awesome. That really helped
Nice.
me go to, you know, learn more or whatever. It was like on a boat too, which was kind of insane. Yeah, so it was a writing excuses scholarship I won, and it was like on a cruise ship for a week.
That's cool.
And it was pretty cool. But it was definitely like, wow, this is somewhere I would never be if I was going on vacation. The cruise ship is like at the bottom of the list of
Yeah.
something I would ever want to do, you know?
Yeah.
But it was really fun anyway. But yeah, I definitely was looking around like, oh, what are they gonna throw me off? Like someone's gonna discover I'm not supposed to be here, and I'm just gonna like go over the side of the boat.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's, imposter syndrome is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
I get it a lot, and some days you just don't feel like you can even do it, like do like write a word, or
Yeah.
it's horrendous.
I feel like imposter syndrome is so hard to shake, especially when you're starting a career or something like that. Like, you know, when I started working, big girl jobs or whatever, I just we felt so out of place, you know? Like if I had to wear business casual, I just felt like I needed to shed, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think as every year I get older, I just care less and less about what anybody thinks. And I've
Yeah.
gotten to a place where I'm just like, yeah, you know, I know my worth now. It took a while when I was freelancing to really realize like, oh, I can set a price that is high because I'm worth it. And if you do that, people will start thinking you are.
Yeah.
Like, I get bummed when I hear about the younger like freelancers that just kind of undersell themselves or just lowball themselves, because then you're just going to be looked at like that, you know? And
Yeah.
so, yeah, it takes a while to get the confidence, you know, to like stop caring.
Yeah. That is the best thing to do. I don't think it ever goes away. But you just gotta like say, get into that mindset or develop the
Yeah.
confidence and the experience to sort of shut it up and ignore
It's
it.
definitely like kind of one of those, like you still get it, you know. Even like super bestseller authors and celebrities, you hear all the time that they still have it. Like, and so I don't think it ever really goes away, but you can learn to like shut it off or recognize when that critical voice is talking to you. You know, you can compartmentalize, like, yeah, this is just the imposter syndrome talking, you know. Once you start recognizing it, you can learn to like move past it easier, I think.
Yeah. I've got one final question for yourself. What is the best bit of advice you've got for anyone who's thinking about even writing a goal?
Man, best bit of advice.
One piece of advice, golden bit of advice.
It's probably not to take any advice seriously. Another writer said that to me when I asked him for advice, William Gibson. He was like, take all writing advice with a grain of salt. And I was
Yeah.
standing with my book like, I like didn't process. I was like thinking about it for like a day, like, what did he mean? And then I was like, oh, I get it. But I mean, in general, like everyone's different. Things aren't going to work for you that work for others. The best thing to do is just to try a bunch of different things and see what sticks, you know? And I think that's another thing that I think about too, is that I think some people aspiring writers that are trying to break in, especially like, you know, from the age of 12 or whatever, querying agents at 13, it's like, relax. Like, you need to go live your life a little bit and go have the experiences and, you know, get in fights and get your heart broken and work some odd jobs and, you know, go wild a little bit to like have the, you know, breadth of experience to draw from when you write your stories. So that's the other point of advice, is like, don't forget to live when you're living in your head, you know,
That's
touch grass
fantastic.
and stuff.
Fantastic piece of advice. Honestly, yeah, that's brilliant. I think a lot of people do forget about it, don't they? They just think they just gotta get the next story out, so they just sit at the laptop every day. And even if you
Yeah.
just decide to take the laptop outside to the park or something, it's a little bit
Just
more
take
of
it
an
outside.
experience.
Yeah, I really like drafting outside in places. Like I like to get on the train and just ride
Nice.
it around like aimlessly.
Yeah.
For some reason that really helps when I'm trying to like break out of some kind of block or whatever. Or yeah, like you said, just go sit in the park. I mean, I write a lot at home too, but also it's important to like make sure you have another outlet, I think, rather than just, you know, because there was a time where I'm like, okay, writing for whatever, 6 hours, and then I'm like, read about writing, and then I'm gonna listen to podcasts about writing, and then it's just like, dude, no, you need more things, different things.
You do, yeah. It's hard. I know. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been a lovely chatting with you.
Yeah,
Where's the
thank
best
you.
place to find out more about you, your writing, and The Last Bee Hunter?
Yeah, so The Last Bee Hunter, I have a copy. It
Nice.
is out now on Angry Robot Books. It
It's an
came
amazing
out.
cover as well.
All right. My friend Ilya Nazarov did the cover and he did a great job. But yeah, it's out on Angry Robot and bookstores, wherever online. Some of the smaller ones, you might have to ask for it. And you can find up-to-date info on my website. It's salgowrites.com. I'm on Twitter as Salgo, Instagram as GoSalgo. And those are the main ones. I probably use Instagram more, but I kind of mix in other things I'm doing, like art and music and stuff like that, Instagram. And on Twitter, I keep it mostly just writing stuff because I guess that's where all the book nerds are.
There you go. Well, I'll put all the links in the description as well. Thank you very much for listening at home. And Sal, thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening.